Let's get this party started.
Welcome to the I Squint Podcast.
And welcome to this, the fourth episode of the I Squint Podcast with your host, Justin Lang. Back at LDI, I got a chance to sit down with Ann Valentino and David Linscombe from ETC. We went over a couple things, starting off with the development of the EOS and the Ion lineup of consoles. It's actually very interesting to see how the EOS and the Ion consoles came to being. We also talked about one of the new products that ETC announced at LDI, which was the Fire and Ice Celador LED fixture. If you haven't seen the video online or read about it, be sure to double check ETC's website or isquint.net to find out more information about it. But we get an inside look at how the fixture is going to fit into the market. We also talked about the Prodigy hoist system and the Quick Touch control system, part of the whole new rigging division from ETC. This all was also announced at LDI. One of the other things we talked about was a rumor going around about a new ETC lighting console coming out. I hinted about this a while ago, and I gave it the code name the ET console. Why ET? Well, to keep up with the E names. You know, you've got the EOS, the Element, Express, Expression, that whole thing. Well, they talked a little bit about it, and I got it on tape. So without further ado, here's my interview with Ann Valentino and David Linscombe from
so we're
ETC.
We're sitting here with Ann Valentino with ETC and Mr. David Linscombe. We're going to go a little bit over about the ETC lineup, the EOS and the Ion. I want to get a brief history. You know, where did the EOS and the Ion lineup come from?
Well, we started the project in 2001 and basically spent about 2 years trying to decide exactly what we wanted for a control console, because we knew from the very beginning this was going to be a from-the-ground-up development. It wasn't a make-from-something-else. So we spent a couple of years just trying to figure out, in the 21st century, what is the task and what sort of tools do you need to achieve those goals, without any real concern about user interface or the philosophy of the product or how it was going to work, just defining what the problem was, in a sense. And then we started putting a face on that. When you do a control console, you have three basic decisions that have to be made before you can do anything else. And one is the underlying philosophy of the desk in terms of how it's going to manage the data. There are really only two choices that you have. You can have a tracking system or you can have a preset system, and all lighting control consoles fall into one of those. So that was our first decision that had to be made that started to form the personality of the product. And we decided that tracking was an elegant way to handle moving lights and extremely applicable for the theater, because that's where we were really targeting EOS for its initial release. The next decision came into the user interface and how one would enter commands into the desk. And from previous experience, I felt very comfortable with the idea that a command line interface would work very well. And then the third decision that we had to make was, when you're working in a multiple queue list environment, the care that you have to take to determine what's being stored when you store a queue is much different than it used to be when you were working in a single queue list environment with conventionals only. And many desks solve that problem using a programmer, which has its advantages. For a lot of different reasons, we decided we didn't want to go down that path. But then we had to make some decisions about how you were going to choose what you were going to store. And once we solved that problem, the what I call the DNA of the desk, or its underlying backbone, was really in place. And then we began to build the user interface components around that. And it was interesting for us because the desk, if you come from ETC products of the past, is extremely obsession-like in its approach.
We've heard that the...
But that was not a goal for
the
us.
ETC was not
it wasn't
obsession.
No,
totally groundwork.
It wasn't our intent at all.
And it was a big controversy inside ETC.
It was a huge controversy.
Because the Expression had such a heart of... It really was the heart of ETC for a long time. And obsession represented branching out to another part of which became very integral to ETC as well. But the decision for the EOS and eventually the Ion Element product lines to kind of form the whole new controls product backbone of ETC was extremely controversial. And people were, you can't do away with Expression, you can't do away with Express. know, they're just built in. You have to have them. And so migrating the customer base, migrating the dealers, migrating ourselves internally has been an enormous job for us in the past few years.
And it was interesting because initially we felt that we were going to be coming up with an entirely new way to do the control. And as we made each core decision, it's going to be a tracking desk. We thought about how the playback would work. You know, would it play back as a state machine so the entire content of the queue would replay? Would it play back as a move fade desk? Is it going to have a command line or not? And every single decision that we made, we looked and we went, oh, wow, Obsession already does it that way. Oh, wow, Obsession already does it that way. So those ideas that came from 25 or 30 years ago that fed into what became Obsession are still extremely applicable today, and it gave us the added benefit of making it easier to transition our customer base. Because over the years, even though Obsession and Expression were very, very different from a philosophical standpoint, from a syntax standpoint, they got closer and closer together over time. So even for an Expression user, they can walk up to the desk, look at the keys, go, oh, channel one at full, enter. Oh, record Q1. Okay.
Plain English.
I think I can figure out how to make this desk work. And that was a key directive for us.
Mm-hmm.
That there needed to be something about the desk that was approachable enough that people could walk up to it with no instruction whatsoever and do a basic task. That just makes them feel more comfortable. I get afraid of a desk if I can't figure out how to bring
sure.
up a light. So
of course. What's there for?
We really wanted to make it as approachable as we possibly could. And I think the thing about EOS and Ion especially that is interesting for people, because it's so easy, they don't expect it to be as powerful as it is. Because if it's going to have all of the features and be so powerful, then it must be hard, right? And I think it's a shock for people when they first put their hands on it and then realize how much power there really is under the hood there.
Certainly. So looking at the EOS and the Ion, they're essentially the same thing, different hardware, mm-hmm. but their core OS is the same.
The software is exactly the same, as it is with Element. It's all the same software.
But what's the future plans here? Because if I look at an EOS, I've got tabs, I'm able to mm-hmm. have multiple screens, move things around. Ion, I've got two screens.
Right.
What's the plan here?
Well, this is a great question, actually. When we first implemented Ion, or developed Ion, because we intended it for the low end of the market, we pulled some of the features out of it that were in EOS because we were concerned that they would be too confusing for introductory-level users. And Ion has had an interesting history because it's serving an extremely broad market space. Everything from introductory users to people replacing much, much larger desks and running 28 queue lists and all these sorts of things. It's been trying to fill a huge place. Now with Element on the market, which really we conceive of as being the Express level replacement, and it seems to be doing that, we're going to be making some changes to Ion to bring it more in line with EOS. So we'll be putting tabs into Ion.
Oh, great.
In our next software release. We'll be putting Query and Snapshot, which were two features that were in EOS that we decided really weren't applicable for the entry level of the market, but now where Ion is being used,
people really want that
functionality. So those will be, all three of those things will be in our 1.9 release, which is our next major software.
When can we expect 1.9?
End of February.
So now that we've got the EOS, the top of the line, Ion middle grade, and then the Element basically taking the Express world over, what can we expect from the control products for live entertainment? Where can ETC go from here?
Well, we do plan to continue to add to the line. Yeah, we plan to have another product in that product line.
Well, earlier, about a month or two ago, I hinted on the site something about a new console that I codenamed E.T., just because I like the alien name of E.T.
Yep.
Is there anything
that... We decided to adopt that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It's the name of the new product, yeah.
I'm so happy that I'm so influential in Middleton right now. So what can you tell us, anything about this codename E.T. console? Or is it even something that's going to be coming out?
Well, we do have another platform in the EOS family in our planning for next year.
Where is this going to fall in line with the EOS Ion and Element lineup?
Yeah.
Sure.
Above Ion, below EOS.
Above Ion, below EOS. Okay.
There's a bit of a hole there that we're going
to
plug.
There's no secret that a lot of people want to be able to program shows maybe on an EOS, but then take them on the road in a very similar hardware platform, but in a smaller format. There's no secret that there's a lot of, mid-scale to large-scale performing arts centers that might prefer a console that's slightly smaller than an EOS, but has really similar hardware kinds of capabilities.
Excellent, excellent.
And we've always seen great sales from those types of products. If you go back to Obsession 600, it was, outsold Obsession. If you go back to Obsession 750, outsold Obsessions, the bigger channel counts. So we'll look to add that sometime next year.
Sometime next year. Excellent. Yep. So, David, what can you tell us about this thing that we saw in the Twitter feed about introducing an LED fire and ice? It was very, very cryptic. Can you clear this up for us at all?
No, we actually count on people like you to clear things like that up. So,
well, this is why I'm here. I'm trying to find out more information about it. It's no secret that almost every single lighting manufacturer in the world is trying to produce an LED or plasma source profile unit. Is this something that we can look for in the near future?
No, it's not in the near future for MeTC. I mean, we are looking at that, and who knows? I mean, we're going to see products maybe here on the trade show floor that can do that, but it's really not in our current near-term product plan. Specifically with Fire and Ice, we started looking at creating really bright wash LED fixtures, and we specifically were looking at a patent that we license as a part of the X7 technology that is a part of Celador, which is using 7 different colors to produce the best quality of light that we can. Part of that patent includes the ability to make fixtures that use a high number of blue emitters to create an extremely bright blue fixture that produces a big range of cool colors, hence the ice. And similarly, a fixture that produces a high number of red, orange, amber emitters to produce high-intensity hot light or warm light, hence the fire.
Okay.
And so we are showing 2 fixtures here on the floor, which I think I kind of call them concept cars, if you will. We are going to sell this like concept cars that you sell. Basically, the ice fixture in an R80 produces about 3 times the output of a Source 4 PAR 750. With an R80 in it. So you're going to see...
But how big of an instrument is this?
Well, it's actually the regular size of an 11-inch Celador fixture.
So 11-inch...
Single-cell Celador fixture that produces 3 times the output in an R80 as a Source 4 PAR.
So what wattage of LEDs are you using in the new Fire and Ice fixtures?
They are using the Rebel emitters from... They're basically 2.5-watt emitters.
2.5-watt?
Yeah.
What's the current high end of the X7?
The Rebel emitters as well.
The 2.5s.
Yep.
So how are you producing this output?
Well, it's basically it's compromises. So the fixture has a high number of blue emitters, but a low number of red and no amber emitters. So for instance, this is not what most people are thinking with LEDs is, I get a fixture, I can produce any color, including white.
Okay.
The fact is that what you're really doing to do that is you're sacrificing everywhere. What LEDs do best right now is produce high-intensity, deep colors very efficiently. And so the ice fixture will produce some warm colors, but at a fairly low intensity.
Not like the fire could.
That's right. It's kind of like a blue light special, if you will. So if you think about a lighting designer, how much blue are they using over their stage? And blue backlight, blue side light, they might want a light blue, a medium blue, a dark blue. Basically, this is a high-utility fixture that you can put up there that'll cover all of your blue range of needs and do it at intensities that outstrip that of a regular Source 4 part.
But then the line designer has to pre-think, I'm going to be using a lot of blues or I'm going to be using a lot of ambers to where they can't mix these colors anymore.
That's, well, just as they do with standard technology. So it's actually moving a little closer to the way a line designer thinks right now. I need to think about how I'm going to use this fixture.
Certainly, I can understand that. But if we're saying, if we look at X7 11-inch, we're talking, we'll say, $1,500 for an X7 at list price. You know, $1,500 for a fire and ice or LED fixture, compared to $695 for a sheet of gel, that's a lot of
They're
thinking
extremely
ahead of.
Energy efficient would be the other big selling point,
okay.
And obviously have a very long life. I think that they'd be very useful in themed environments where you
for
want
long term.
Very high intensity. I think you can't overlook the output. We're talking about 3 times the amount of blue light that comes out of a Source 4 750.
Certainly.
A Source 4 using a blue gel will be about 1 lumen per watt.
Okay.
Actually, it's less. Than 1 lumen per watt. An ice unit in an R80 produces about 15 lumens per watt. So it's an extraordinary amount of energy efficiency that's going there. A lot of theaters are looking to get really green.
And does it still use the film on the front, the plexiglass, to spread horizontally and vertically?
Yes.
And available in 10 to 90 degrees,
that's right,
both vertical and horizontal? Fantastic. So, David, back at LDI, you guys announced rigging. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
Get a little more specific about what kind of rigging products you're offering now?
Yeah. Well, at LDI, we introduced a series of packaged rigging hoists, basically. They're aimed pretty squarely at the academic, educational, religious markets. A series of hoists that we call Prodigy. And basically, we introduced the first range of that at LDI, which is our fixed-speed hoist, which allow for installation in facilities up to about 50 feet in proscenium width.
50 feet is the widest you can get?
That's on this current range of fixtures.
So what's the smallest you can get, essentially?
Well, we can go, you know, very, very small from that. I mean, I guess it would be a question of how small you wanted to get and still use a hoist. But
so this is obviously something that has to be spec'd and built. It's
That's
not
right.
something that obviously
right.
out of the price list.
That's right.
So where did the development of the rigging system come from? What made ETC want to get into rigging?
Well, you know, the package hoist business really is only 8 or 10 years old when Vortec product came out a number of years ago and things. We started looking at that market primarily because the types of facilities that they were going into were facilities that we were going into. So we have service people going there. We have sales operation based around those types of facilities, high schools, performing arts centers, college type facilities. Also then, the makers of those hoists began approaching our reps, and we would note that our lighting reps started carrying these lines. So as a you know, as like any business, when we start looking at areas we can expand into, we see adjacencies, and we thought that the rigging and the packaged hoist business was an adjacency that we could go into.
So, David, we've got the Prodigy hoist, and now how do we control it?
Well, we're also introducing a range of controls called the Quick Touch control systems, and this is an area where we've really brought quite a bit of innovation, and you'll find innovation all over this hoist product. Controls is obviously something that's very, you know, natural for ETC, and we brought a lot of different things into that control surface that are pretty cool. It handles presets. Each of the Prodigy hoists has a load cell directly on it, so it reports the weight that the hoist is carrying at any time right back to that control surface. It does things like a lot of safety features. If that load that is normally been carried on that batten goes very high, for instance, as if a student or someone were riding up on the batten, it stops the batten and reports that back to the control surface as well.
So it's sort of like an RDM system. It talks right back to the controls,
constantly
saying, I'm way out of weight. You need to fix something here.
Yep.
Oh, great. Excellent. So now that ETC has come into the rigging market, we've obviously got show control and lighting control. That's something ETC is infamous for. We've got the Source 4, we've got the Revolution, we've got the Celador LED fixture. From what I understand here, ETC is trying to be a total source provider, which is great. You know, you don't have to go shopping around. But what's the one thing that ETC is missing here in the whole grand scheme of things? There's no plans for sound, I hope.
I hope not either. The closest thing I wanted to ever get to sound was like plugging in ClearCom systems.
Is that,
you know,
something?
I think if you look at ETC's history, something we've always done really well is we've taken products that were generally considered to be professional products. If you look, go back in lighting control and look at what Fred did with the Vision console. Electronic lighting control was really only made for the high-end user, for the professional user. And then he created a product that brought that down and made it available to the masses, to the educational market and other markets. It's the same thing with sensor dimming, with the Source 4, which is, you know, extremely high-performance product now in high schools all over the country.
Exactly.
With rigging, we've done that again. I mean, with the Prodigy system, you typically take a system that was geared towards the upper end of the market, and ETC's innovations in both cost, size, safety, ease of installation have brought that down and made it available to the academic, and education, and religious markets.
So now that we have the EOS, the Ion, the Element, and the Express completely went away, we've actually been hearing rumors, mumblings, if you will, that the Express board is now back available as a special order item. Is that still something you guys do as a special order?
You know what? I mean, the fact of the matter is we still have some Express consoles that we could sell. We would sell them. I mean, Jason, if you want to order an Express, Justin, if you want to order an Express, we could sell you an Express. But we really, it's not in common production right now.
So there is obviously no product line or production facility for the Express lineup. You're basically retrofitting older Express ports.
We have some that are in stock. We still supply some to our Asia offices and those kinds of areas.
So. Because we have a lot of friends and colleagues that are really missing that Express port, so there's no plans on updating and making the Express console available again?
I really encourage those people to really take a good look at Element. I mean, there is a time when, there comes a time when it's time for an industry to move everything forward.
Certainly.
And I think you saw, we feel that EOS moved the top end of the industry forward. Ion, I mean, we've sold, Ion will be 2 years old here at the end of December, or at the beginning of December, and we will have shipped over 2,000 Ion consoles with wings during that time. So there's been a vast uptake of that technology in that level of the market. And I think where Express represented the state of the art for so many years, I really encourage people to move up to the next state of the art, which is represented.
You can only move forward.
You
can't move backwards.
Right. I mean, in theater, I think specifically in the theater industry, there's a big tendency to hang on. Not necessarily about moving forward or moving backwards, but just hanging on.
You want to hold on to what you know.
That's right. You want to hold on to what you know. And we think it's time for the industry to move to a new level, and that's what we're trying to do.
Thus raising the bar.
Yes, raising the bar.
One last thing I wanted to go over with you was, a couple weeks ago, I put up an interesting little photo that I put together of, it's actually a drawing that I put together, of an accessory panel for the Ion.
We took a look at that.
Well, what's the idea, what's the consensus in Middleton about doing something like this where you have an ML or moving light wing panel to give an Ion or an Express, or excuse me, an Ion or an Element user some more handles, more control, rather than relying on screen or what's available right now on the consoles?
Well, it's an interesting, I mean, we definitely took a look at that, and I think it's something we would definitely consider doing. I'm not going to say that we are planning to do it. The interesting thing about, you know, Ion and Element is when we introduced Ion, there was a big panic from the market. Oh, it's too complex.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at Element, what did we do? Well, we just took some moving light stuff off of
certainly,
it.
Certainly, yeah.
And there's not much else gone, but the presence of that rotary hardware and LCD screen had a lot of people going, oh, I can't use this product, you know. And so, I think the idea of doing that outboard is a good idea. I think for Ion, too, as Ann said, Ion's being used in a really wide variety of tasks, and we kind of intended it to be pretty mid-market. So that you could get by with the controls. I think the next product that we've leaked out to you tonight that we'll be introducing will be slightly more expensive than Ion, but it will give people access to all the types of controls that are available in an EOS system as well. So we're looking at that.
We're looking
at moving on.
Yeah. Excellent.
Thanks to Ann Valentino and David Linscomb from ETC for taking time out of their busy, busy, busy LDI schedule to sit down and talk with me for this, the iSquint podcast. Be on the lookout for future episodes of the iSquint podcast. I've got more interviews, tech talks, and reviews lined up. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the iSquint podcast.